It is Monday, April 9th. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today, and thanks for listening to RBN. To save a guest schedule for this program, go to spingola.com, click on the radio schedule button, choose the year and month. You may see a list of the guests together with links to their websites. For questions or comments during the program, email spingola1@yahoo.com. My regular email is deanna@spingola.com. RBN is struggling financially and therefore is conducting a pledge drive. You may help RBN by contributing to that pledge drive. Just call 800-724-2719. You may also support RBN by purchasing products from the RBN website, including business cards and bumper stickers. You may also subscribe to the archives at a higher rate than the meager $1.33 per month, or purchase some advertising if you have a product or service that you would like to sell. To do any of these things, just call 800-724-2719 or go to republicbroadcasting.org. President Jimmy Carter, because of the purported 1973 oil crisis, created the gigantic bureaucratic agency, the Department of Energy, staffed with faceless Washington bureaucrats that we did not hire and cannot fire, financed by a multi-billion dollar taxpayer funded budget. The justification for the existence of any government agency depends on the perception of an existing or potential crisis that requires supervision and regulation. Government bureaucrats have no incentive to alleviate any problem that justifies their job. Every managed crisis increases the size of government while reducing independence and personal freedoms to the point that we no longer are in charge of our own lives. In the past few days, I again reviewed the film Heavy Watergate, The War Against Coal Fusion, which describes Dr. Martin Fleischman, a professor of electrochemistry, and Dr. Stanley Pons, an electrochemist, and their announcement of the experimental production of N-fusion, a way to create nuclear fusion at room temperatures, what people later called coal fusion. In 1983, Pons was the chairman of the chemistry department at the University of Utah, and Fleischman was a researcher at that university. The University of Utah wanted to establish priority over the discovery and its patents by making a public announcement before the publication of the discovery in any peer-reviewed journal. This decision created criticism against Fleischman and Pons, as such an announcement was a breach of how scientists usually convey new information to other scientists. On March 23, 1989, Fleischman and Pons finally announced their discovery of a sustained nuclear fusion reaction at a press conference. On March 26, Fleischman warned on the Wall Street Journal report not to publish, or try replications until a published paper was available 2 weeks later in the Journal of Electroanalytical Chemistry. That did not stop hundreds of scientists who had already started their work on laboratories the moment they heard the news on March 23rd. According to the video, Professor Stephen Jones of BYU learned about the experiment from an informant at the Department of Energy. His actions prevented the two chemists who had used their own money for their research from patenting their process. The physicist community raised doubts about the process because this group had taken about $40 billion in grant money for hot nuclear fusion research. The film introduced a term, pathological criticism, which means that once a particular community or group of people has criticized a new approach or solution to something, it has to maintain that criticism in order to justify its own existence and agenda. We do have to take a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors with our guests today. So stay tuned. Today are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Dr. Wood's websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com, and Andrew's website is checktheevidence.com. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hello. thanks for having us.
Indeed.
Wonderful to have you both on the program. It's great. I think we've done this before. but I can't remember. I know I've had you both on the program, just not together, I think.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I had you on two consecutive days, but this is great. And of course, you're aware of the heavy Watergate video.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and have work. Actually, you have, Dr. Wood, you have it posted, part of it on your website, drjudywood.com, and you have a segment there under anomalies. And I can see a lot of comparisons and similarities between what happened with cold fusion and what has happened with 9/11.
Exactly. And the same players involved in the same issues.
Which is very interesting. And, of course, we know from my monologue that the Department of Energy is a recent, relatively recent agency of the federal government. And I believe that its whole purpose is to regulate or to conceal things that have to do with energy. And we also know that people have designed cars that can run on water and all kinds of things. And yet, you know, something typically happens to those people. They, you know, are either suicided or, you know, they just don't have any success in getting their product to market.
I think,
or they just go quiet and go into the background.
Well, I think the way that it seems to work is, I mean, it's the same with, you know, the organizations like the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, or agency, I forget which agency or administration, but I think that what happens is they set these agencies up and they think, well, you know, who can run it, or who can be, you know, the head honchos, and they immediately go to the companies that have got all the supposed experts. So, you know, you might get sort of some sort of vaguely honest people who will actually try and give good advice to the organization. But then when you get something appearing, you know, in the case of energy, like, as you mentioned, something like Stanley Mayer's work on the electrolysis process for cheaply making hydrogen on demand to power a vehicle, for example, when that sort of technology appears, somebody might come along and from one of the companies and say, oh, yes, that's very interesting. And then they'll take that report back and, you know, and they'll say, actually, this could be a threat to our core business, so we're going to have to do something about it. We're going to have to keep an eye on this. And then that goes on from there, basically. Similarly, when you get a treatment coming along for cancer, which is, say, you know, apricot kernels, which can be successfully used to treat many types of cancers, and you can't patent it, and it's very cheap, any company, any pharmaceutical company that's working on an expensive drug will say, oh, yeah, we can't have this cheap thing coming out on the market and people knowing about it, so we have to start a propaganda campaign or kill some people and get rid of it.
And that's exactly what they've done. And that is true, that they have people from the industry. It's a revolving door between corporate America and government agencies. And as you talked about the FDA, I mean, we had a lot of people who, when they were trying to approve of aspartame, they just simply got somebody that was associated with the company that produced aspartame to come in and direct, be a controlling factor at the FDA, and you got it approved right away, and now it's in several thousand products, and we have a lot of disease and a lot of health issues as a result of that. But it's all about money, and I believe that
they got saccharin off the market instantly.
Yeah, and it's same thing here with 9/11. I believe that that you in your book have shown some of the evidence that is relevant to 9/11, and then all of a sudden you have another group of people who are really fighting that and actually trying to kill a messenger, not literally, hopefully, but certainly trying to kill your message.
Exactly. And, you know, they can't refute the book, so they need to do something else.
Sure. And it's very interesting. I got an email over the weekend regarding this, and I sent it for, you know, I work with the radio program. I use the computer in my office, and I sent it from my laptop downstairs up to my office twice. I sent sent the email plus my response to the email, and it hasn't come up either time. So I'm not sure what's going on here, but hopefully we can look at that later on, because I think that it speaks to some issues that many, many people have brought up. And it also, when you read the email from this gentleman, you think, well, gosh, he seems to be making some sense. But then when you reread it and you evaluate it, and you think, well, this guy makes no sense whatsoever. But he seems so persuasive. And I think that many people believe whatever they want to believe if it sounds persuasive or if it appeals to their emotions. Doesn't have to be fact-driven. It doesn't have to be scientific, as long as it appeals to their emotions. And, gosh, if it's popular, well, then it must be true, correct?
Right. I think one of the things I might say is that, you know, Dr. Wood's research, which has been ongoing since, probably about, 2004, what she's compiled is, you know, as she said, is irrefutable. So essentially the only way to, muddy the waters is just to insert doubt at every possible opportunity. And there are some very sort of common techniques, you know, which I think I put them all under the umbrella of perception management, whereby instead of using the word evidence, you never use the word evidence, you use the word theory. And this then, immediately changes the, mischaracterizes it so that a theory, of course, can be debated, to a much greater extent than evidence. You know, if you talk about a building turning to dust, then that's not a theory, it's an observation. So, when you then try and say, it's all this directed energy weapon theory, well, no, it's actually not a theory. This is what is actually, what the evidence tells you. And it's that whole scene, really, which I've written about, because that's what I saw was going on from about 2007. And I think it was also something that went on with the cold fusion research, where they tried to sort of say, well, these guys have no evidence. What they're doing is just messing about, and we're going to do a proper report on this and prove that it doesn't actually work. And if you can do that in a suitably sort of compelling manner, and look at, for example, if you can massage data and hide the subtle effects which Pons and Fleischmann discovered, then you can get away with it, which is what they did. And so we've seen a similar operation going on for the last, for the last 5.5 years, really, almost now. And particularly since 2008, this seems to have accelerated with these groups like Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which are essentially, we've now got some evidence that those groups were purely set up to stop people discovering what Dr. Judy Wood has put together and stop them from realizing that it was actually correct, to try and delay that realization for as long as possible.
Well, I think that a lot of people just assume that whatever inventions or whatever discoveries are available, that we will know about it. But I totally believe that the government has concealed the evidence, the designs of a lot of things that we have absolutely no idea about. I know that they use a lot of weapons in the Middle East that are very high tech, extremely high tech. And yet the average person doesn't know anything about these.
Well, that's right. I think it was Dr. Wood discovered a clip in 2004, or maybe 2006, from 2003. And I think I might have seen it as well. But it's from a press conference which was held in 2003 with Donald Rumsfeld and General Myers. And they have some journalist in the audience who seems to be quite, up on things. And she's asking about whether directed energy weapons are going to be brought to the battlefield, what sort of timescale. And what she's talking about are sort of conventional weapons, which have since become more visible, such as the MFEL, the Mobile Tactical High Energy Laser, and the airborne laser from Boeing and Lockheed. They become more visible, and they put articles in the Washington Post and stuff about these systems now. But at the time, I think they were more under wraps, as it were. And these Rumsfeld and Myers, very, very, very nervous about this woman asking these questions, and Myers sort of shifting on his feet, scratching around his collar with his finger. He's very uncomfortable answering questions on
It almost looked like he was going to it almost looked like he was going to reach over and put his hand over Rumsfeld's mouth, Myers, to shut him up.
Right, right. And then, you know, Rumsfeld comes out with one of his, you know, there are known unknowns and unknown knowns and those knowns which are unknown. One of those types of answers. And you just, by the end of what you're listening to, you know, you just think, well, what did he say? I haven't got a clue what he actually said. And so what I'm saying is that those systems, you know, they're very much public now. But we often get emails from saying, oh look, you know, they've just released this new microwave weapon, and it's just going to be used, you know, it's going to be used in a test somewhere. And you think, well, yeah, but if you go and look at what Dr. Woods discovered, it's not that the same type of microwave beam weapon. It's different to that. It seems to have some type of beam component possibly, but it's a totally different type of weapon, and it's based on a technique known as field interference. And so that's one of the things which they've tried to cover up as well.
All righty. We do have to go to a three-minute break, and it's interesting that you bring up Rumsfeld because he was also behind the aspartame scheme. All righty. We'll be back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors. All righty. Welcome back. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Dr. Wood's websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. And Andrew's website is checktheevidence.com. All right. You were talking about this press conference where Rumsfeld was and where he was just kind of giving one of his nonsensical answers and really didn't divulge anything. But certainly when you get around to asking people to be specific, they really don't want to be specific. They want to just cast out negative things about a person in order to negate the person's message.
Right. I mean, there's a couple of things, you know, probably worth sort of putting in at this point. And I think one of the things is that, you know, I always go back to Eisenhower's warning from 1961, where he talked about, you know, the military-industrial complex taking over things. And it seems that he was disclosing that, you know, the groups that had sort of formed in the war years and after the war were beginning to control a lot more than most people realized. And I think that is the case with, you know, things like the energy issue as well, which ties in with that. And so there are a lot of things which are completely hidden from view. And, you know, people should be aware of that. And I think they should also be aware of one of the things that's not talked about very much with Dr. Wood's research is that she did start this court case in 2007. And that included some named companies who actually are military industrial contractors. And two of them are Applied Research Associates and Science Applications International Corporation. And, you know, I've heard other people, such as William Porlek, talking about groups like companies like Science Applications International Corporation being heavily involved, you know, being huge benefactors of the so-called black budget. And so it is really to those areas that people should be looking, you know, to find not necessarily, you know, everything about 9/11, but they should, I think, those groups know who perpetrated the main events of 9/11. They know who has the technology which destroyed the towers. You know, and again, what we've seen is an effort to make this into a debate. It's not a debate. We know the towers were destroyed, and we know they were destroyed with some type of energy weaponry. That much isn't really open for debate. And we also know certain characteristics about the weaponry because they're like something else, like this thing called the Hutchison effect. So those really aren't up for any sort of debate. And I think if anybody tries to suggest that they are, then they either haven't looked at the evidence enough or they have looked at the evidence and they're trying to steer your attention away from it. That much has become clear, and we've been looking at this now for, you know, six years. So I think I'd like to make those points.
Right, and science is not determined by debate or by popular vote.
Right. It's determined by gathering evidence and analyzing it and finding what, you know, characteristics it has.
Right.
It's very interesting. I think, you know, as I have reviewed the comments of the first day via the mainstream media, They introduced the concept that it was to control demolition. And that was something that was has been supported by various groups since it was announced on the mainstream media. And I think that anything that, you know, initiates in that way, I think you have to question it. I mean, we were all being programmed that day during a very extremely traumatic event.
Right, right. And I think, you know, going back to the energy issue, you know, one thing that's, I wanted to, going back to the original, you know, your original opening with the Heavy Watergate film, one of the things that wasn't quite clarified in that is that the role of Stephen E. Jones, what he would claim to have been working on at the time was a process called muon-catalyzed cold fusion. And if we can explain, you know, a little bit about cold fusion and what it's meant to do, is that there are two types of, well, there are two types of nuclear energy. There's fission power and there's fusion power. And these actually both rely on the fact that you get a small amount of matter is converted into energy during the fission or fusion process. And in the fission process, this comes from nuclear binding energies, essentially, is how you get the energy being released. And that involves breaking apart large atoms, such as uranium, and then you break them down into smaller atoms. I forget what the products are, but that's when you get the radioactivity coming out. And you get huge amounts of energy coming out based on the amount of fuel that you actually consume. You know, millions of times more than you do for coal or other fossil fuels. With fusion power, what you're doing, you're getting very small nuclei, typically what's called deuterium, which is a hydrogen nucleus with an extra neutron. You get those to fuse together, and you get helium, and then you get some of the nuclear material is converted to energy, and that gives you the external output of energy. Now, with the hot fusion program, they have this thing which they call break even, in which they can build this huge complicated reactor which has large numbers of coils and plasma injectors and all this kind of stuff, and they need a break even point where they can get out as much energy as they put in. And it's very difficult to achieve that. I can hear the music coming in. But with cold fusion, it's a totally different process, which we'll perhaps go into after the break.
All righty. We'll be back in 3 minutes, so stay tuned. Welcome back. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Dr. Wood's websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. Andrew's website is checktheevidence.com. And Andrew, you were talking about that it takes as much energy going in as they wish to produce, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And we also have the radiation issue.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that's good about this, or supposedly good about, fusion power, that you don't have as much radiation. But I don't want to go into too much detail. But basically, one of the techniques they would use is use very high-powered lasers to fire into a vessel which contains plasma, and then they get the plasma to fuse, and then you get the energy coming out, which they then have to utilize in some way. And it's a hugely complicated process if you go and look at it. And if you go and read the literature, the useful, usable fusion power has always been 20 years in the future. I think it's still 20 years in the future now, and it has been 20 years in the future for about 45 years, I think. So you've got a huge investment in that technology. But then going back to Pons and Fleischmann, the two chemists, they came along essentially in 1989 with their process, which looked, they basically said, well, look, we're getting a lot of energy out of this process, and so much energy, it can't possibly be a chemical reaction. In other words, chemical reaction is where you, for example, would mix, kerosene with air, gas with air, and that would give you heat, when it burns. And that's a measurable amount of energy, and that's a chemical reaction, and mixing in oxygen and so on. But a nuclear reaction, it can give out a very, millions of times, hundreds of thousands of times more energy. And Pons and Fleischmann worked out their process must be at least partly nuclear. And they went to the science community and said, well, we think it's fusion of some kind. We don't know what kind. And they all said, oh, that's just nonsense. You're chemists. You know nothing about fusion. We can't be having these chemists, producing this sort of fusion type of energy. It just can't be true. And so that they
embarrass the physicists.
Right, and embarrassing all the physicists who are supposed to know everything about everything and, you know how the world works and know there's no God and all this, that, and the rest of it. And so, you know, that process is basically that they were just getting a lot of energy out by putting a very small amount of energy in, you know, maybe only a few hundred watts, and they were getting thousands of watts out, you know, sort of factor of 10 greater. But the problem was that it wouldn't work every time. You know, you could set up a set of equipment and then set up an identical set of equipment. One set would work and the other wouldn't. And they could never quite determine, at least in the early days, what made the process work reliably. When it was practiced by more and more people, it became more reliable. But this Stephen E. Jones character, who's become prominent in the 9/11 research community, he, as you mentioned in the intro, invented this process, or he claims to have invented this process, called muon-catalyzed cold fusion. I'm not sure exactly how he set up his experiment, but a muon is a type of electron. It's called a lepton, I think, if I remember my particle physics correctly. And so he had this process where he could fire muons into it and get this small-scale fusion started. And so that was kind of muddled together with Pons and Fleischmann's process, which involved, I think, a palladium electrode and a lithium hydroxide electrolyte. Theirs was basically what's called electrolysis, electrolytic process. Electrolysis means breakdown by electricity, electrolysis from Latin. So they had a completely different process. Then Jones comes along and says, well, I'd like to insert
in an example of the difference,
right,
between like hot fusion and this low energy nuclear reaction, the Pons and Fleischmann. Let's say you want to get in a house. There's a couple of different ways you can get in a house. You can bulldoze down the front, you can bomb it out, you can do a bunch of things. Or you can pick the lock or use a key and walk in the front door. But one takes a whole lot more energy and effort than the other. And the high temperature fusion processes and other such things like that are always being pursued are the bulldozer approach. All this super duper extra energy, you know, just putting all sorts of energy into it to try to get in rather than just thinking smart and getting the key and open the front door.
Right.
Good analogy.
Yeah, that's exactly the sort of thing we're talking about. And, you know, I'm sure there's a similar analogy. But yeah. And so anyway, we have Jones saying, yeah, well, I've tried this fusion process. And actually, you know, I think what Dr. Wood was, you're going to make the point about the naming of it as well, weren't you? So I don't know if you wanted to discuss that.
Yeah, it's interesting that 2 years ago, when or 3 years ago, when they had the 20th anniversary of the death of you know, low energy nuclear reactions, with better known as cold fusion, they interviewed Martin Fleischmann, and he was asked what he regretted the most about what happened in 1989. He said that he regretted allowing his competitor to call it cold fusion instead of low energy nuclear reactions. Interestingly, the person who called it cold fusion is the same person who refers to my work as space beams. Naming is very effective.
Yes, which is very interesting because the email that I received over the weekend talked about space beams. In fact, that was one of the first sentences out of this individual's mouth. And he said, let me just read you the first sentence. The more I read about Judy Wood, the more I think that only a woman could fall for this whole space beams hoax. First sentence out of this guy's mouth.
That's pretty amazing.
It still doesn't address the evidence.
No,
it doesn't.
I mean,
the same with... Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously you've got a sexist comment there straight out of the gate, which is pretty unusual. And then the research has nothing to do with space beams, if you actually study the evidence. And... you know, what's the definition of it being a hoax? Why is that? You know, why is he saying it's a hoax? What does he base that on? So right there, you've got three things in just a few words, which you're immediately wanting to take apart.
Sure. And it's really very interesting. And I responded to him, and I said, I really do not think that gender is a factor in a person's ability to differentiate between truth and deception. The fact that you bring up the term space beams and reveal that you have read about Dr. Judy Wood indicates that you have never actually read her book in order to draw your own conclusions. I think so many people read about the situation, or they read about they read about space beams or some other thing, and they never actually go to the source and say, well, what does her book actually say?
Yeah, it's very effective.
It is very effective. It's more effective than I realize, really, you know, because I do try and check things out, but some people don't. They'll just sort of accept whatever the most common description is. I think you sent us a copy of that email, and I think another thing he said is that I did a search for Stephen E. Jones and Cold Fusion, and the only pages that came up, I haven't got this quite right, but this is essentially what the guy says, the only pages that came up were on websites that were praising Judy Wood or something. And, what sort of research is that? You know, it sounds very similar to David Ray Griffin's research, you know, establishing truth through the number of Google returns that you can get for a certain praise, you know. So it's just crazy stuff.
That's if you're talking about the effectiveness of psychological operation, that may be true.
Mm. Right.
You know, how many Google hits you get. You know, if you get lots, then your plan has been effective.
Right.
Interesting.
You know, and the other thing we were going to mention actually was this. I think there were a couple of things we wanted to try and mention in this program to kind of get them on the record, as it were. And we had this about 2 or 3 weeks ago. This new document came out, which created a little bit of a stir, and it's called 9/11 America Nuked. I think that's the title, isn't it, Dr. Judy?
Something like that.
Yeah, 9/11 America Nuked by somebody called Jeff Prager, who apparently is quite a well-known journalist, I later found out. And this document, why I mention it, is it relates to the cold fusion, because in this document it mentions muon-catalyzed cold fusion and Stephen E. Jones. And it seems that they're again trying to muddle this together and get, you know, Google hits on cold fusion and 9/11. So in other words, if you search for Google for 9/11 and cold fusion, one of the returns that may now appear is this document. And if you read it and have a look at it, there's an awful lot of work going to put in this document together, an awful lot of work. But we found, and there was a big feature on this on Veterans Today, and I think, was it Gordon Duff, was it, Judy?
Yeah.
He did a big feature on it, said, oh, you know, we're going to get this document soon. It's got all this good stuff in it. And again, you look at it, and you can download it for free. The guy's given it away for free. An awful lot of the pictures have come from Dr. Judy Wood's website. And let's see, 239, is it, pages? It's over 200 pages. And I did a couple of searches on this document when it was brought to my attention. And I did a search for Jim Fetzer, and it brought back about 50 results. And I did
60,
Yes.
In the first one.
Then we found that on, I think it's page 106 of the first one, was it? I have to just go to that page. That there was, it wasn't 106, but basically they've got quite a bit of that cold fusion in this as well. But interestingly, they haven't got anything about what it was actually to do with, and that's the Hutchison effect. In other words, if you go and search for Hutchison in this document, you won't find any references to John Hutchison, which is precisely what is in Dr. Judy Wood's book, the discussion of the Hutchison effect and how the similarities that have been seen in the experiments that John Hutchison has done and are seen in the World Trade Center evidence. That is not present in the document at all, nowhere. And we have another section on Stephen E. Jones, and that's copied, I think, lock, stock and barrel from a recent article by Dr. Morgan Reynolds. He's not even credited. No web links are given. And there's other, I think, large portions of this document have been copied as well. Isn't that right?
Yeah. I just looked at a sample of, a few, handful of pages, and you Google a sentence, and that pops wherever it came from.
Yeah.
Right. It was composed of a lot of bits and pieces from other people's research, and, of course, that's probably why he's giving it away for free, correct?
Right, it would be sued, but it's also because it wants to be noticed. I mean, it is in camouflage. No words are changed, verbatim, from other people's work.
Right. You know, and I suggested that perhaps, if you look at this, it looks there's a lot of time gone into producing this, good quality desktop publishing and formatting, interesting images, very good layout, much better than somebody like I could do, with my very humble sort of word processing and desktop publishing skills. Very good layout and so on. And it's been given away free. So is that then meant to say, well, we've got Dr. Wood's book, which is, costs $40, and so on, and yet this is given away free. Which one are you going to go for, sort of thing,
Sure.
And
it does look professional. It does look very impressive. It's got wonderful pictures, colored pictures and whatnot.
The copy, the plagiarism from one article to another has, seamless merging of one to the other,
which is
a talent.
And you mentioned Gordon Duff, who is a former intelligence agent, and he is promoting this Prager's work. So that's very interesting. I don't know if there is such a thing as a former intelligence agent.
Right, unless they're in a grave. Yeah, because it's. I understand once CIA, all the CIA,
I believe that's true with regards to CIA, and I think once in the mafia, always in the mafia, and
right, unless you're 6 feet under.
Yeah. Right. So the other interesting thing in this document as well, which I think I'm just highlighting page 136, there is a picture of a piece of metal which caught our attention. And it looks like some melted steel, and it's actually labelled the steel. But to our understanding, it's actually one of John Hutchison's metal samples, which, to my understanding, is actually an aluminium bar. But that, as I say, the word Hutchison is not even mentioned. So again, we have this.
It implies that it's from the World Trade Center.
It does indeed, and it's in-your-face perception management muddle-up. You're getting these different bits of evidence which have been separated out, carefully sorted. In Dr. Judy Wood's research, put into the book and so on, been on the website for years. Now you get something like this, glitzy presentation, blah, 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 all jumbled together again, so that people can't sort it out, they can't work it out, it goes into debate, nothing is known, nothing can be decided, and nothing is done.
No sources of the photos, so no one could go track it down themselves to see if they're real photos or not.
Right, and that's one of the issues, because if you're doing honest research, you'll reference your sources. You'll tell people where you got the information, which then makes it easy for somebody who wants to actually jumble all that up to actually just go to those sources, produce their own version of it, and mess it all up and mix it up. Because the goal is to prevent people actually understanding this. That is the goal. I know that some of what I was speaking about is perhaps difficult for people to understand. I've tried to explain it clearly, but it's not necessarily that clear. So it's quite easy to bamboozle people with a few, oh, this looks impressive, or this must be right, and they get away with it.
And if you can prove that UN catalyzed fusion isn't capable of this, then people think that it's been debunked. But my work has nothing to do with UN catalyzed fusion. Mine, I term it magnetic electrogravitic nuclear reactions, which is very related to what Pons and Fleischmann were demonstrating. And history repeats that, muon catalyzed fusion was the thing that Stephen Jones was using, which, never will amount to anything. He used that to discredit, to muddle in with Pons and Fleischmann's work in 1989.
Now, this Jeff Prager admits that he never saw the evidence from Judy Wood to support directed energy weapon idea, but he knew some tremendous powerful forces were used to disintegrate those buildings. So basically he created, or someone created, this very impressive looking book. And
many of the images, you know, I cropped down that are on my website. Mm-hmm. And he, interestingly, has the same cropped versions.
I noticed that also when I looked at the document, which I thought was, well, that's kind of interesting. Kind of blatant, I think. All righty, we do have to take a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Dr. Wood's websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. And Andrew's website is checktheevidence.com. Now, the name of the book is 9/11, America Nuked. So that tells you, you know, where they're what they think about the whole thing. I'm just downloading those again, and it's about 500 pages altogether. You can download it in two parts. And Fetzer does recommend it on his website, which is what 9/11 Scholars Forum, and he promotes it. He says never before published photos, but I guess you'd have to add except those for those that were taken from your book, correct?
And from my website too, that have been there, and that were submitted in my federal QTAM case in 2007.
Really? Now they were on your website, in your book, and in that case that you submitted.
Right.
And that's I think another key point, which you know people seem to easily forget, because. Let's just say that, you know, Jeff Prager or whoever's put this together is an honest researcher and he knows that this is true, then why doesn't he do something with it? Why doesn't he put it into a court case or start some class action lawsuit or, you know, whatever it is? I mean, I don't know all the options, but Dr. Judy Wood, with the help of Jerry Leapart, took up one option in 2008, and indeed, for the record, that all those documents are there. You know, I was speaking to somebody a few weeks ago about this very case, and he was saying, oh, you know, it wasn't done properly and blah, blah, blah. Well, if it wasn't done properly, then, you know, how do you do it properly? You know, why didn't you do some other version of it if you know how to do it? And he was claiming to know what to do, you know. I says, well, why didn't you go and do something then? You know, because if you've got the evidence and you know that it's true, then you can take it forwards. And you can do that sort of thing with it and learn from what's already been done. Or at least that's my view of things.
They like to use the court case being tossed out as proof that it's not true. But if you look at the actual statement of the Court of Appeals, they acknowledge that the law applied to my case, but that they were ignoring the law to dismiss the case.
Which is very interesting, and of course we have to assume that the court is also kind of embedded with the same big corporations, and
think about the poor judge who decides to accept this case. Is he going to be justified on the way home from work?
Possibly, yes, quite possibly. And so people just kind of go along to get along, apparently, in Washington or in the corporate world.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk in this country. It's probably the same in the U.S. about the courts actually being corporations themselves, you know, and they have contracts and so on. And, you know, and if you work under common laws, we call it here, you know, you can say if you get called into a court for, you know, a parking fine or not paying your taxes or something, you can actually work under common law. And if you haven't created any harm, you know, you can't be prosecuted. So if the courts are corporations, then we can imagine that they're well embedded with the military-industrial complex system of doing things.
Oh, absolutely. All righty, we do have to take our 60-second top-of-the-hour break so we can get a station ID. We will be right back with our guests today, Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. And As I mentioned before, RBN is struggling financially and is conducting a pledge drive. You may help by contributing to that pledge drive. Just call 800-724-2719. You may also support RBN by purchasing products from the website, or you can subscribe to the archives at a higher rate than the $1.33 per month, or purchase some advertising if you have a product or service that you wish to sell. Again, just call 800-724-2719 or go to republicbroadcasting.org. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Dr. Wood's websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com, and Andrew's website is checktheevidence.com. And we will take calls after the next break in about 3-4 minutes at 800-313-9443. All right. Now the situation with the book that we were talking about, 9/11 American Nuked. Basically, what is the purpose of that book? What do you think motivated these people, whether it was Jeff Prager or a group, to put this book together? I mean, it's a large book. As it said, 500 pages.
It says 500 pages, but it's only like, 100 and some odd in one file, and then,
I think it's meant to be double-page spread, isn't it? So it's, if you look at the PDF file, it's 162 plus, it's in two parts, 86. But then that each of those pages in the PDF looks like a landscape double page spread.
So I
presume they're counting it as double size pages or something. It's an odd format, certainly, to look at.
But they have pictures in them, centered on them too.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, the motivation, I think, is literally, to muddy things up, to make it look credible, to bring in, we haven't really seen nuclear fusion brought into the 9/11 side so much. They've kind of mixed together in this document fusion and fission a little bit.
Nanotechnology,
which is, all these buzz phrases and so on that people come up with. So people are going to look at this and say, oh yeah, this is the business. This is the bee's knees, so to speak, as we say. Yeah, this is the real stuff,
And Prager's not a scientist.
Right. So I think it's just really, again, perception management, make it look impressive, to confuse people, give a level of fake credibility. And then, obviously, again, if you search for drjudywood.com in this document, in the 500 or whatever page you want to describe it as, you won't find a single reference to that. So that, I think, betrays very clearly what its agenda is, to make you not look at that or to discourage you from looking at it, because that's not, that's not the correct version of what is correct.
True. And of course, the people that use the space beams term and other things, they use the terminology, the right terminology, and it really is designed to discredit somebody, not to discredit their work, but just to discredit them as a person.
Right.
And that keeps people from looking at the evidence.
Sure.
And as you said,
keeps people very distracted.
Yeah, and as you said, a lot of work has gone into this. This isn't just something that's been put together on a web page, in a couple of days. There's several weeks of work gone into this, at least, I would say, even if it is just an elaborate sort of cut and pasting job from various sources, which there is some.
Did you see page 8?
Page 8.
I did.
Get to that. Is that first, is that on the first one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
They carried the wrong thing in there.
Yeah, what is that all about? When I ran across that the first time, I thought, what does this have to do with anything? It's for blitz pads, for...
Is it OxyZips or something?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
It's like an ad campaign.
All righty. We do have to go to a break. We will be right back, and we'll take some calls at 800-313-9443. Welcome back. Hey, our Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. And Andrew, why don't we, before we take some calls, could we just quickly cover the Vancouver 9/11 hearing before that?
Certainly, yeah, that'd be very useful. Thank you. Yes, we've got these hearings coming up. Is it in June or July? Is it, Judy?
Mid-June, I think.
And we had these Toronto hearings, which were organized by a chap called James Gourley. And these hearings were about, you know, 9/11, and they were meant to set up another sort of citizens commission of some kind. And, you know, there's various websites that you can go and look at these. But the Toronto hearings, Dr. Judy wasn't invited. And we have evidence that they were a complete setup, and that's covered on my website. I've got an article called 9/11 Truth Deafness at the Toronto hearings. And then we've got these other hearings which have been organised by Jim Fetzer in June, and Dr. Judy Wood and Dr. Morgan Reynolds were both invited, but due to the way the conference has been set up, and you can see the way it's been set up, where they just want to say, oh, well, you know, we still don't...
It's a debunking party.
Yeah, it's basically a debunking party, but they're trying to sort of say, well, is it a debate? You know, let's debate 9/11, and then we can decide what to do. Well, I'm sorry, but in 2008, a court case was already started because the evidence...
2007.
Then, yeah, sorry, 2007. Mm-hmm. I keep saying 2008. In 2007, the evidence was already available, enough of it was already available to start a court case, and affidavits were submitted, and all that is on record. So there's no point in even debating that. So you have to ask yourself what the purpose of these upcoming hearings in Vancouver is. I don't want to go on about them too much, but again, my understanding is that Dr. Reynolds is not going, and I know that Dr. Judy's not going either. So if you hear any stories that they are, then these stories are untrue.
And they're listing us on their website. That's interesting. And of all the people that they list, we're the only two that have theories, in the little blurb right. Describing us.
Right. So that is
everybody
very
else has evidence.
Yeah, everyone else apparently has evidence, but Dr. Reynolds and Dr. Wood only have theories, so there you go. You've just got to follow the person that's written all that out and read about them in my book, and you'll probably get a handle on what's going on. But the other interesting point that we sort of thought about, and we don't really know the answer, is that both of these hearings have been held in Canada, whereas I think most of the speakers are Americans. Which is odd. You know, you would have thought, why have you got to go all the way across the border to Canada and, you know, go through immigration for what it is? I know it's not huge between America and Canada, but what's all that about? Why don't they hold it in New York or something, or some central place that's easy to get to? Why has everyone got to go north to Canada? Seems very strange to me. So there's something going on there, I think. But,
avoiding U.S. laws, maybe?
I don't know.
Because it was a U.S. lawyer who set up the Toronto one.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, James Gourley, as I say, he was a U.S. lawyer. So I really don't know, you know, venues are cheaper in Canada. I don't know the answer.
Well, didn't want to be disbarred for promoting a hoax.
Could be, yes, could be that. But so I think it's worth, you know, encourage people to just think a bit more about what's going on with these things before making a judgment. And another little thing I'd like to say is that I've written a lot of this up, you know, some of what we've talked about today in my book, 9/11 Finding the Truth. And I've just made a Kindle version, an Amazon Kindle version. So I found out how to do that. It's not too difficult. And you can download the Kindle version either from my website, or I've actually now set it up as an Amazon, you know, product that you can buy for 99 cents. So if you've got, you know, if you use Kindle and you find it convenient to just buy it and then it gets downloaded onto your Kindle automatically, you can do that for 99 cents now. 9/11 Finding the Truth, Andrew Johnson. And that should come up on your Kindle.
All righty. And you don't even need to actually buy a Kindle. You can use a Kindle for your PC, which you can download for nothing.
That's right. So it's all there for you.
Okay. That sounds super. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All righty. Let's take some calls. We've got a bunch of callers lined up here. Let's take Barry in California. Barry, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Deanna and Dr. Woods and Andrew. It's a pleasure to talk with you guys. Colonel House told Woodrow Wilson when they were setting up the Social Security before they did, you know, that it's real secretive, and he said people would not figure it out. There might be a few that might figure it out, and we'll just, make them look like they're, you know, idiots. Well, that's what we're doing with today with 9/11. There's so many different groups, and everybody's got the right answers or the right theory or whatever. And instead of coming together and see what they have in common, well, we know that 9/11 happened. We know that someone evil did it. But beyond that, they won't do that. I was involved with a Patriot group, and I started seeing a lot of people leaving. Well, when I got a hold of someone that was one of the first that got ridiculed and left because they asked questions, I got the rest of the answers. I actually talked to from the horse's mouth, and I couldn't believe that I'd been living lies. And so Dr. Woods and Andrew, it's amazing to me. You can tell that this has been set up. All these different groups, they've been infiltrated, or they were set up purposely to keep people away from the full truth of what happened in 9/11. And these people that have done this are sitting back and laughing at the Patriot movement, because we're not going nowhere, because we can't, you know, we can't agree with the, you know, with the evidence. We have to go by facts, not by feelings, not by theories. You know what I mean?
Not by vote. What I'd like to ask is, you know, those who planned 9/11, that was a pretty serious planning to plan it out. Do you think they just forgot to plan a cover-up?
It's just obvious, though. I mean, if you just forget all the theories and just look at the facts that you're trying to bring forth, you know, you got to look at the facts.
Absolutely. Have you read my book?
It was out of the way.
Have you read my book?
No, I haven't, but I looked at your website and I've listened to you before. And
if you read my book, you'll see what happened. You'll understand what happened. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Well,
you bring forth facts.
I think, you know, to add on to what you're saying, I think it does get, I don't know if I'm sensing you correctly, but it does get very depressing because, you know, I now describe what we're doing, you know, us as a group. We're a minority of a minority. I mean, the truth movement, the Patriot movement, and so on, it's still a sort of a minority of people. It seems to be a growing minority. But that, as you, I think, have implied or even openly stated, that parts of that have been set up from the get-go. The people that are running the planet or whichever group it is, whatever name you give to them, they knew what was going to happen. You know, they knew when the internet became popular. They knew the sorts of things that people wouldn't get into. So they had to get their mitts into those things early on and make sure they never went anywhere. And a lot of these groups, I think, as you were implying, have been sabotaged, have been neutralized. You get infighting and so on. And the problem then becomes, you know, if you, for example, to go and read my book, which is free, you might think, oh, this is just a load of, you know, quarreling and arguing and infighting. I'm not going to read this. It's just, you know, it's just upsetting me. And that's what it can appear as. And that, therefore, it stops the progression to the understanding, which is what a lot of people desire, because you've got all that noise and crud, you know, in the way. You've got to spend a long time in working through all of that. And some people just either haven't got the time or they haven't got the combination of the time and the interest. And that, I think, is, you know, what I've found we've always been working against. And so you're really almost down to an individual with this. You know, it's down to each individual to do what they can to further their own understanding and not rely on the larger groups to do anything in particular, other than perhaps facilitate certain things like you know, certain types of meetings where you can get some useful information and so on. Going back to Dr. Wood's book, if you know, one of the things I've tried to do, Dr. Wood came over to the UK in October last year, and we got some good recordings, and I've got quite a good DVD that I'm, you know, basically selling at cost price, and I can ship you one of those over to the US for $2 or $3 if you go onto my website and you just, if you've got PayPal, yeah, I can get you one of those. So, and that we've got quite a positive reaction to that, you know, people have found this a very understandable presentation. So if you don't want to wade through the whole book at this point, you can at least get a DVD from me, and, you know, that should explain most of the salient things in the presentation.
If I could just say one more thing, just to give an example, well, what I'm trying to say is I also belonged into this to try to get back the Republic with this certain group, and I don't want to mention any names. And what happened is all the leaders got kicked out, and one person took over and became the savior of the group, like he's some kind of prophet. And when people started questioning his motives and his and what he was doing, then they got ridiculed and got kicked out. And it started happening more and more and more, and all these promises never happened. And when I got a hold of some of the ones that first got kicked out that caught on, I got the rest of the puzzle. So what happens with the truth movement, when you start asking questions and say, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense, over here doesn't make sense, let's look at the real facts here. What's the real fact? Mm-hmm. And see, and if you start questioning it, that's when they start moving in on you.
Absolutely. Wow. I found that, you know, I had to leave the UK truth groups, and I left the Scholars for 9/11 truth group, you know, because the similar things, basically.
Right. All righty, we do have to go to a break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. All righty, we are back, and our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Dr. Wood's websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. Andrew's website is checktheevidence.com. And I understand that a lot of libraries do have Dr. Wood's book. And so if even if your local library does not have a copy, they can get a copy for you through interlibrary loan. Alrighty, do we still have Barry on the line, or?
Yes, and thank you for telling me that. I'll check that out.
All righty.
And if they can't find one through interlibrary loan, they know that there's interest in getting a copy, too. There are, you know, several libraries that have, you know, there's a waiting list, so they've ordered more.
All righty. Barry, did you have another question? Because we do have a lot of other callers.
Yeah, it's just that... my main thing is, before you go into a movement, some kind of truth movement or whatever, check out everything before you do that, and get all the information before you make a decision. I felt like I wasted 2 years of my life, but like someone told me, the lady that I asked all the questions, if you didn't go through that, you wouldn't have met all the great people that you've met. There is a lot of good people in this movement that I was in, but they just some of them are still deceived. So, but I met a lot of good people, so I have a lot of good friends that are like-minded, and I'm thankful for that. So,
and you also
check out
learned,
all of that.
Right, and you also learned what one of the cover-up techniques are that you wouldn't have appreciated if you hadn't gone through that.
Oh, yes, I learned a lot. And thank you so much for letting me come on and share this with you and what you shared with me already. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Barry. All righty, let's take William on line two. William, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hello, thank you. I think it's a privilege to be on this show with the three of you, really, and particularly Dr. Wood. And I just want to say that Dr. Wood and Andrew Johnson are like the silver lining of the dark cloud of 9/11, all the destruction and the murder.
Well, thank you.
Thanks very much. That's very kind.
Yeah, well, that destruction and murder benefited a very tiny portion of humanity and was devastating to everyone else. But I think the root of the 9/11 evil was the financial system out of London and New York. And it allows the control and the corruption of most of the world through control of the information and knowledge and corruption of most people in the world.
But what has empowered that? Think of where'd they get their power from? They got their power from 9/11.
Oh, yeah, but that the fact that they thought they could get away with that was because through the money they controlled, they think they control everything. And I think they felt they controlled the Internet far more than they did. And thank God they didn't. But anyways, I think the insanity and the lies of the powers that are today, it's become so arrogant, so reckless, and so aggressive that it's provoking like an equal and opposite reaction of which you are a part. And that reaction is sanity and truth. And I'm really looking forward to the day that these criminal psychopaths are the powers that were, not the powers that are. And I think it's not only in, yeah, you're covering the science and energy part of the truth. There's a tsunami of truth coming. And you're covering the energy part of that, but there's also...
That is the part that gives the other the power. That is sort of like the central processing unit of the whole work.
Right, I think if I might just add, I take what the caller's saying, if I could just add in a couple of little bits here. I think, you know, energy, the idea of having free energy, which we haven't really mentioned so much in this program, we have before, but the Hutchison effect, which is what they tried to cover up, going back to that Prager document that we were talking about, it isn't even in there, and the Hutchison effect is one of these routes to free energy, and the free energy is one of the dimensions of a world of plenty, because everything, you know, that you've been sort of mentioning, money and so on, that's all part of the scarcity paradigm, that there's not enough to go around, there's not enough resources, there's not enough food, not enough, you know, healthcare and so on, not enough fuel. That's all part of the scarcity paradigm that the people running the planet, whoever they are, have tried to make more powerful, you know, more controlling over the last few years. And I think, you know, the whole money system and all that is part of it. So that would be my, you know, point on that side of things.
Well, I agree with you, and I think if you look, it's not just it's money, the media, it's there's incredible awakenings in medicine, the fraud of modern Western medicine, all kinds of science, mathematics. You know, you're covering again the energy part of it, religion and politics, and you know when we eliminate or when we go toward a more truthful spreading of knowledge. I see that we're going to eliminate, there are multi-trillion dollar frauds going on today. There's the energy fraud of hydrocarbon energy. There's the money fraud of fractional reserve banking. There's the fake war fraud of this Afghanistan, Iraq, and now we're supposed to attack Iran. The Western medicine medical fraud is at least the $1 trillion fraud. And the world is just going to be an incredible place when we move beyond all this fraud, and we get rid of these psychopaths that are the powers that are today, and they become the powers that were. And I guess my question to both of you is, what motivates you to do this?
All righty. We do have to go to a break, and they'll answer that on the other side of the break. So stay tuned. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. And William asks, what motivated both of you to do what you're doing? Dr. Wood, let's start with you. What motivated you?
Well, as I say in my book, that, you know, when I first told my mom I had to do this, and I was going to get into it, and she said, well, if you do that, then you won't have a job. And I replied, if I don't, nobody will have a job. And as I see it, you know, this is our planet. Whose responsibility is it to expose these things? And I see 9/11 as really the central processing unit of it all. And it's not the event of 9/11 that happened. It's the cover-up of it that's allowed everything else to take place. Just imagine if the day after 9/11 it was solved, you know, the truth came out. We wouldn't have, you can go down the laundry list of things that have happened since then.
Absolutely.
9/11 has empowered everything. So it's those who are covering up 9/11 that are the most guilty in my book, and because they are empowering everything that's taking place.
Right. Now, tell us about your job. Tell us how your life has been impacted by your doing this.
Well, if you think about it, you know, you can't keep doing what I was doing and be researching 9/11. You see enough of the smearing on the internet. Teaching, you know, at a university, the students would be looking for all sorts of excuses to not learn the material and complain, and then it turned into a zoo. As it was when I was still teaching, the you know, various internet trolls, anything that's in the way, I call it troll. You know, lead, follow, get out of the way. Given the way mm-hmm. you're a troll, they would be, they emailed my dean, my department chair, my colleagues. Who knows how many students they emailed? Yeah, it, it, it's very disruptive to whatever job, kind of job you have. But I chose, you know, to sacrifice my career to do what I'm doing because I felt it was that important. If, you know, if I didn't, the information that I put in my book wouldn't be out there. Because I've been doing this for quite a few years now, and it still isn't out there by anybody else. What does that tell you?
Yes.
And no one can refute it.
Exactly. It's much easier to just discredit you, correct?
Yes, yes. And that would harm any, you know, kind of professional position you would have. And probably why a few want to stick their neck out and support. You know, it's because they don't want that to happen to them.
Sure. All righty. Andrew, what motivated you?
Well, it was really a sort of an ongoing process for me. I mean, I'm still working and stuff, but I'm sort of I kind of work as a consultant, I suppose you call it, and so I'm kind of more, you know, I'm not working with an establishment in the same way Dr. Wood was, and also I don't have the qualifications that she has, so I can easily be kind of dismissed because, you know, I've just got a sort of degree in computer science and physics, which, you know, quite a lot of people have got that sort of qualification, so it's nothing particularly special. And so I haven't had the same attacks made on me as Dr. Wood has by any stretch of the imagination. But my motivation really was that I knew that there was stuff that was being covered up, important stuff which would make a huge, huge difference to our lives. And I started that process of research back in 2003, and I realized that the official story of 9/11 was false in about early 2004, mid-2004, something like that. And I moved forward from there, really, and eventually came into contact with Dr. Wood, I think, in late 2006, mid-2007. I can't remember the exact time, but it was around then. And so I've really gone forward with that and tried to... My goal has been to use the resources that I've got to hand to give the information away as widely as possible.
Right, and of course the free energy issue that you brought up before the break is really, if you really think about it, I mean, everybody should have access
right.
to electricity, to be warm, to have the all of the amenities that free energy would give. I mean, it's amazing, and yet we have people, predator-type people, who have control taken over and control energy, control communication, control transportation, and this has always been the case. But
see who controls the energy controls the people.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, if the caller wanted to, I've written an article called A World of Abundance or A World of Scarcity, where I try and go through a lot of these themes, and that's on my website. It's also in the book that I mentioned earlier on, because I think that's where I ended up, basically. I wrote that in 2008, And if you want to have a look at that, you'll see sort of some of the threads that I tried to pull together there, which might be helpful. I don't know.
All righty. Well, thank you so much. All righty. I think we've answered that question. Let's take Maurice in Georgia. Maurice, welcome to the program.
Hi. Let me give my thanks again to all of you for your efforts. And I'm just going to interject some observations. One, I heard Gordon Duff talking this morning on the Mike Harris show somewhat about this topic. I haven't read the book in question, so I don't know what their stance is exactly, but I know that he was also making references to free energy out of, I guess, this new technology, which I didn't hear the whole show, so I don't really know. But I was wondering what you know about what they're actually claiming. And the other thing he was saying that I thought was kind of interesting was linking it to our interest in bombing Iran, because he seemed to maintain that they were developing these free energy technologies there.
I thought they were covering plasma physics on that program.
Yeah, I didn't hear the whole sequence.
Well, if I may try and answer that question, then.
Yeah.
Earlier in the program, we discussed this document, which Gordon Duff was promoting. It's called 9/11 Newt. And within
and,
that...
And Mike Harris has also had Prager on his show a couple of weeks ago.
Right, okay. I wasn't aware of that. But if you look at that document, you can download it. It's called 9/11 Newt by Jeff Prager. So if you Google that, you can download the two files. If you don't have, you know, free, you can download them free. And you can have a look through there. And in that, you will indeed find references to energy. Now, up until about 2006, no one at all that I can think of was talking about the energy issue in relation to 9/11, except in the context of, you know, depleting oil supplies, and they had to go and get control of Afghanistan because of oil. Nobody was talking about fusion, you know, physics and this sort of thing. Dr. Wood started talking about that, I think, in 2007, was it? Because that's where the evidence had led you, I think, to that sort of place.
Right. In fall of 2006, it started putting stuff out, but I knew about it in early 2006.
Right.
Through my student, who was soon murdered after that.
Right. That's one thing we didn't.
I would like you to talk about that, too.
After we finish this one.
Yeah.
Well, if I just finish off. So, if you look at that Prager document, it talks about fusion energy in there, as we discussed earlier on, and they seem to be, what they've done is they've taken that fusion energy information, mixed it all up with stuff that is irrelevant, so that you don't actually see that what it's actually to do with is the Hutchison effect. If you go and look at the Hutchison effect in 9/11, Dr. Wood's studies of that, you'll see it's all there, it's all laid out for you, it's perfectly clear what's actually going on. Whereas if you look at that Prager document, you won't have a clue. It looks impressive, but it won't really give you a clear picture as to how it relates to 9/11.
All righty. Thank you, Maurice.
Great. Thanks.
All righty. Did you have another question?
Apparently not. Well, yeah. Just.
Okay.
Do you have a source? You know, I had talked with you before at one point. You had made the point of how do you communicate, because your Dr. Wood's basic premises, and I've come up with my own solution potentially to educate people a little bit. And just in passing, I'm wondering if you have a source of 3D models of the site at Lower Manhattan, and I mean, I know I can build.
Okay, here's
myself, but
right. Here's what my premise is. Let's look at the evidence. If you're building models, you're not looking at the evidence. You have to make assumptions to make models.
Yeah.
Is that what you're getting at? Just to do something with a model.
No. I'm just using it as an illustrative thing. I'll just lay it out and, you know, let it go with that.
Okay.
I was going to build a simulation of the demolished site so that you could see that there's no debris. You know, with Vermal, which is a web 3D technology, you can, you know, you could have a sense. In other words, I'm just trying to illustrate your ideas.
I'll play debunker, and I can debunk that one real fast. Oh, you just made that up.
Well, that's
why I like. That's why I stick with the evidence of the clean, you know, straight evidence.
I mean, if we go back to what I said before, if you want a really good illustration of Dr. Wood's research, then look at Dr. Wood's research in video format, because, as I say, we did this video in October last year. You can watch it for free on my website. I think Dr. Wood has it linked on her website as well. It's called,
if you go to wheredidthetowersgo.com/shows, once you go to wheredidthetowersgo.com, at the top there's some links. Go to the shows page, and you get several videos in there.
And I've also got those on DVD, so you can go onto my website, and I'll send you a DVD. If you haven't got any money, I'll send you it free, because, you know, I just produce them as cheaply as I can. And you can show that to anybody who's got a DVD player. You can't have it simpler than that. You're getting it from the horse's mouth, so you have no, you know, problems about misinterpreting or forgetting, you know, slightly or whatever. It's all there for you now. It's virtually free, so you've got everything you need if you want to take the information forward and, you know, illustrate it to whomever. It's all there for you now.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for caring about this.
Absolutely.
That's important.
Yeah.
All righty. Let's take Tony in Florida. Tony, welcome to the program.
Yes, Deanna, Dr. Wood, and Andrew from the UK. Okay, I'm looking at that PDF file you're talking about, American Nuke. I'm on page 84, and I doubt if any of you have it right in front of you, but you may be familiar with this picture. It's called The Pit. And the funny thing about it is I've been watching a video of that all weekend long. I finally found it after a year. That's the 50 to 60 to 70-foot hole in the foundation of the World Trade Center. It's through the bathtub. It's down through the granite. The granite's all melted. It's all textured, melted. If you look at a detailed video of it that's been on the net for a few years, there's strange-looking multicolored pebbles of cantaloupe and melon size. There was obviously immense heat that blew this hole through the bathtub and through the granite. I wonder if any of you have any thoughts on this. Now you're telling me that this is what what's his name? Duff and the guy at Harris was talking about.
Brazier.
In my mind, this confirms to me the Dmitry Kovalov theory
yeah,
of I know you're laughing. Hey, okay, go ahead. How did that get there? And I'll shut up. Tell me, how did it get there? Something did it.
Now, let's start out with the evidence of what happened. On 9/11 and the days following that, there was all sorts of fire hoses on, you know, the debris field. There were no steam explosions. It rained. You know, if you have high heat, you have a steam explosion. Case closed. If you have a bomb going off in granite, then the seismic signal would travel through the granite to the seismic recording stations. Didn't happen. There were no signals that traveled through the earth. There was only surface waves. Also, if you have a bomb in the basement, you have a busted bathtub, Hudson River water comes in, you have a steam explosion. And that still doesn't explain how things turn to powder in midair as they're falling. A bomb in the basement doesn't cause to happen what happened. You first have to start with what happened. You don't start out with conclusions and work backwards. You start out with the evidence and let the evidence lead you to the conclusions and not let the conclusions color the evidence.
I'll go to Dmitry Kovalov. Right, let's do Dmitry Kovalov, shall we? Because he wrote to me in, I forget when it was. It's all on my website, by the way, if you want to find it, because I posted some of the correspondence I had with him on my website. Very nice chap, by all accounts. Comes across very well, good communicator, very polite, very nice. But what he actually did was he lied. When I discussed with him that what about the damage to the bathtub, as Dr. Wood had just outlined, he didn't even know what the bathtub was. And then later he claimed that he did know what the bathtub was and he could explain what happened to it. And then he actually wrote to a friend of mine who'd also been supportive of some of the postings that we had been making regarding the destruction of the World Trade Center. And he wrote to this person and said that he'd written to me about the nuclear demolition hypothesis, and I changed my mind, and I actually agreed with him, and he wrote to this friend of mine. So he basically lied to this friend of mine that I'd actually changed my mind based on what he told me, which was completely untrue. So when you have evidence that what he's shown is not correct because of the other evidence that you know, you can't explain, and then evidence that he's lied, you can be pretty sure that the rest of what he's come up with is untrue. As regards the actual picture that you refer to in the document, it obviously can't have been done by a bomb because we've already gone through all of that. So you have to look at another type of process, which we have said since at least 2007, if not before, it's some type of nuclear process. It is just not a hot nuclear process, which is what other people are saying it is. And that information is all in the book, it's in the videos, and it's on the website.
So you're telling me that that hole was created from the top down, not the bottom up. Is that what you're saying?
We didn't say that.
No.
How did you get that idea?
We said that it was created by...
got that idea.
We said that it was not created by a hot nuclear bomb. Right, that's essentially what we said. It was created by, who knows, some other process. Right? So that's what you've got to go and look at.
Well, it's there. It's awful strange. It's incredible to look at that thing in detail. I mean, the granite's melted. I mean, you guys have obviously
How do you know it's melted? I've got pictures of file cabinets they said were melted, but the paper in it's unburned.
So you can't melt it without heat.
I understand. Just one last thing, and I'll leave you alone here, is that about a year ago on another
could you
RVN
hold on, Tony. We do have to cut to a break. We'll be right back. Just stay on over the break. Welcome back. Our guests today have been Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Dr. Wood's websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. And Andrew's website is checktheevidence.com. And we did have Tony on the line, and he talked about something that was melted, which probably may or may not be a good word to choose. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's a whole lot of evidence, and you have to use all of the evidence to determine what happened. You can't just cherry pick one item of evidence and base everything on that, because think about chocolate chip cookies. One of their main ingredients is sugar. Well, just because you find a trace of sugar in something doesn't mean it's chocolate chip cookies. You know, coffee. Some people put sugar in their coffee. That doesn't mean it's a chocolate chip cookie. So mm-hmm. just because you find one detail that you interpret as, and then, you know, there's a lot of people that tend to put all their eggs in one basket on one detail that they've interpreted or misinterpreted. But if you look at the entire body of evidence.
The other thing I'd like to just bring up as well is we get this again and again where somebody brings up a picture like this. And so on. So you can see that it's melted, therefore it must have been a nuclear device which heated it because of the heat required to cause such a change in the rock or some other similar thing. Well, again, we've got all the other evidence which shows heat wasn't involved. And also we have other things like Hurricane Erin, which hasn't come up in today's discussion. We get Dmitry Karlozov producing this 26-part, 4-hour-long video, or however long it is. And he doesn't even mention that. And this is all in Dr. Wood's book, and it's in the videos that we've done. And if you're going to just ignore all that, then you ain't going to find the truth. You know, you might get fixated that it must have been a nuke because you understand nukes or, you know, you can handle nukes. But what we're looking at is a completely different type of process which no one talks about, no one wants to talk about, because it unlocks a secret which will change everyone's lives. And we know what nukes do. We know, you know, we know all about those now. We use them to create energy, as everyone knows, and it's created all these problems. And when it creates problems like that, the people that run the world don't care. They want to create problems. That's why people still are happy to talk about, for the powers that be, they don't mind people talking about ordinary nuke technology.
The other thing, too, is we have no idea about what this picture actually represents, where it was taken from. That's my thoughts. I'm totally unprofessional.
I don't know what date it was taken on, who took it, which direction it's pointing. It's not referenced.
I also heard someone else interpret the surface of it as being smooth because someone applied a surfacing to it.
Right. It looked like
in the past.
I mean, maybe there was some degradation in the rock of some kind, a small rock movement, and they were filling it with concrete or something to, you know, I don't know what it was without more information. You can't get that from this picture. We don't know
right.
where it came from. If we could go and, you know, get a reference, we could look at whether there was a construction, you know, journal associated with it or something, find out what was done.
Right.
But we do know is right after 9/11. Well, I know the article it came from, and the article was talking about the ice age, you know, erosion from the ice age being in that rock, and that's why it was.
We've run out of time.
Oh.
Thank you so much, Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. I hope that you'll join me again. It's been very interesting.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All righty. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk to you tomorrow.